You're listening to
The Antioch Podcast.
Conversations about biblical anti-racism.
Have mercy.
Let me say it one more time. The Antioch Podcast.
The Antioch Podcast is a ministry of Preach System.
Oh, I got Jesus, yay.
Hello. Welcome to the Antioch Podcast, conversations about biblical anti-racism. My name is Eric Nykamp. Have you ever been asked to eat something you thought was completely disgusting? Just the smell of it, the sight of it, or even just thinking about it makes you get that feeling in your stomach like you're going to get sick. Or maybe you've had the opposite experience where you were eating and someone you cared about started making comments about your food being gross. In our series, Radical Acts, we've been looking at the stories in the Bible leading up to the birth of the multi-ethnic church, and today's story is all about food. The Apostle Peter is asked by God to think about eating something he had been raised to believe was disgusting. And he was brought up to believe that the people who made that kind of food were disgusting as well. But here was God telling him not just to eat their food, but to bring the gospel to them in their own home, even though they were the kind of people who literally put Jesus to death. It's a lot to stomach, pun intended. Our team of anti-racism educators and friends had a lot to say about this with our usual brand of theology and humor. Let's go now and listen to this conversation.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Antioch Podcast, where we have conversations about biblical anti-racism. We are a group of multicultural, multi-generational, food preference friends who get together on a weekly basis to have conversations. And we have been working through the Radical Acts, which means we have been working through the Book of Acts, taking an anti-racist lens to it. Through this process, we are discovering new truths, new interpretations, big questions, and a lot of joy and a lot of laughter. You know how it goes. You've been with us for a while. As usual, we're going to start off our conversation with a brief introduction of who is around the table today. And today we're down to four, but that's okay. We've got it all together. Eric might be feeling a little outnumbered because we've got a whole lot of woman power in the house.
Oh, yeah.
But as we introduce ourselves, we'll share our name as well as our racial ethnic identity so that you can know who is speaking and from what lens we might be speaking from. And then we will have our get to know you question. And today's question is, what is your yummy, yucky food or your yucky, yummy food, depending on how you want to look at it? What we mean by that, what is a food that you enjoy, but other people around you think, why in the world are you eating that? Why do you like that? So it can either be a single food item or a food combination, but we're talking about yucky yums today. I'll get us started. My name is Michelle Lloyd Page, and I identify as an African-American female, and my yucky yum is black licorice. I love black licorice, especially organic black licorice, because then you get the real liquor. Yeah, that real licorice flavor and not so much sugar. I really like that. No one else in my family likes black licorice, which comes in handy when you have a bag of jelly beans.
Yeah.
Because I get all the black licorice. And this past Easter, you know, stores have all the candies out for, you know, creating Easter baskets. I found a bag of just black jelly beans. I was ecstatic. And they were on sale. So I had thought that would justify going to get three of them, right? I mean, these are large size bags, family size bags. Yeah. The only Easter basket I was filling was my tummy. All right. So
quick aside, do you like salty black licorice?
No, I'm not a big fan of the salty black licorice. And I didn't know that there was such a thing as salty black licorice until I started at this very Dutch institution. Yes. And someone gave me some licorice. And I was like, what the heck is that?
So I am one of those descendants of a Dutch person in America. And I didn't know about it either till I went to that same institution and met Dutch Canadians who were all about druppies. And introduced me to it. And I was like, I think my people left the Netherlands before that was a thing. And maybe that was okay.
Yeah, I think if I more seriously take up running, then I might develop a taste for it, because that's a nice way to add salt back in after workout. So I would get the flavor that I love. And then that's like, what is this? But yeah. Yep. Eric, you were just talking, so what's your yucky yum?
Okay. So hi, my name is Eric Nykamp, and I am a white man. And that speaks exactly to my yucky yum, because at my house, I am the only white person who's 100% white. My kids are blend of Asian white, and my wife's Chinese, and their palates have been strongly shaped by Asian culture. So I get teased all the time for my white foods that don't taste good if you are anticipating an Asian palate. And so of all the many, many, many things, it is mayonnaise. I get teased. Like, I'll pull it out. Okay, I'm making burgers on the grill, and like, I have all these condiments, and like, my kids will look over at me and they'll see me take a nice knife full of mayonnaise, and they're like, that is the whitest thing ever. Double meaning.
Yeah. It's white and it's white.
And they're like, yeah. And so then they're like, I want you to think about all the white foods, Dad, that like they used mayonnaise, and we don't like any of them. And so so that's the thing. Anything with mayonnaise, nice. But especially mayonnaise on a burger. And I would, that means I always have mayonnaise, because no one ever finishes it. So.
Okay, that is, I would have never guessed that, but that is so cool.
That's a good one.
I know someone who is going to listen to this and totally relate to that. So.
Yes, it's a white thing, but it, to me, I'm like, that is a good white thing.
Susie, how about you?
Yeah, I am Susie Dixon, and I identify as Puerto Rican and Italian woman. And my yucky yum, I don't see it done very often here, but it was something that I loved and still love. And that's when you make white rice, the Puerto Rican style, you usually have this the sticky rice that it sticks to the bottom of the pot, right? Mm-hmm. And it's nice and crunchy. So there's a name for that. It's called begao. And so I like to eat that the next day with runny eggs over it.
Oh! Sorry.
I love it.
We are talking about yucky yums, so it's fair.
It's in bounds. Uh-huh. When did you realize that was a reaction that somebody had to something you thought was delicious? Like, do you have a distinct memory of that?
It's not just one distinct memory, many. But my husband has gotten to the point where he knows I like it, so he'll make it for me every once in a while. So
that's love.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ooh, yeah.
Okay. Gotta recover from that one.
Don't knock it till you try it. It's pretty good.
Yeah, but I'm vegan, so I won't be eating the runny egg. So
yeah.
This is yet another good reason to be vegan. Libby, how about you?
Hi, my name is Libby Heisinger. I am a white woman, and my yucky yum is a family treat that I grew up eating, which was cottage cheese with tortilla chips.
Oh. just cottage cheese?
Just cottage cheese, and you eat it with tortilla chips. Oh, okay. It was something we were all just like raised eating, and it weirds people out.
I can get cottage cheese. I'm just trying to imagine how you all, who came up with,
I have no clue.
Let's try tortilla chips.
I was just born into this world, but it's the saltiness. It's good.
I get the saltiness. Yeah. Okay.
I can see that. I can see that working.
It's a white thing.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't think that it's anybody else's thing. I think it might just be an us thing, but, it might definitely be a white food combination.
Okay, just mix some mayonnaise in it.
Oh, no.
Well, one day when I'm around cottage cheese and tortilla chips, I'm going to try it just for you.
Yeah, just, thank you.
Just to see what it's like.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now I'm wondering about the wisdom of asking this question. But that is good. Wait, say we're deepening our knowledge of one another. And it's also demonstrating trust that we're trusting each other with all this stuff. So
we're also trusting all of you listeners.
Yeah.
With our yucky yums. Yeah. Don't yuck my yum.
Yeah. And don't judge us. Don't judge us for what we like or don't like.
If we ever get invited to speak somewhere as a group to some church and they like have this incredibly unusual spread of food that includes all this stuff, we'll know like you are a deep listener. You really were paying attention.
Wouldn't that be such a spread? Anyway, welcome everyone. We're going to continue on in the Radical Acts. And today we are all the way up to Acts chapter 10. And Acts chapter 10 is a larger book. So we're going to divide it up. And so today what we're going to focus on is Acts chapter 10, verses 1 through 23. And in this passage, you might recall that it talks about Peter's vision. And so, again, we're going to read through the scripture and then we're going to have a conversation. So, Libby, would you get us started?
At Caesarea, there was a man named Cornelius, a centurion in what was known as the Italian regiment. He and all his family were devout and God-fearing. He gave generously to those in need and prayed to God regularly. One day, at about 3 in the afternoon, he had a vision. He distinctly saw an angel of God who came to him and said, "Cornelius." Cornelius stared at him in fear. "What is it, Lord?" he asked. The angel answered, "Your prayers and gifts to the poor have come up as a memorial offering before God. Now send men to Joppa to bring back a man named Simon, who is called Peter.
He is staying with Simon the Tanner, whose house is by the sea." When the angel who spoke to him had gone, Cornelius called two of his servants and a devout soldier who was one of his attendants. He told them everything that had happened and sent them to Joppa. About noon the following day, as they were on their journey and approaching the city, Peter went up on his roof to pray. He became hungry and wanted something to eat, and while the meal was being prepared, he fell into a trance.
He saw heaven open and something like a large sheet being let down to earth by its four corners. It contained all kinds of four-footed animals, as well as reptiles and birds. Then a voice told him, "Get up, Peter, kill and eat." "Surely not, Lord," Peter replied. "I have never eaten anything impure or unclean." The voice spoke to him a second time, "Do not call anything impure that God has made clean."
This happened three times, and immediately the object was taken up into heaven. Now, while Peter was puzzling over what the vision he had seen could signify, the men sent by Cornelius had learned where Simon's house was and approached the gate. They called out to ask if Simon, known as Peter, was staying there as a guest. While Peter was still thinking seriously about the vision, the Spirit said to him, "Look, three men are looking for you. But get up, go down, and accompany them without hesitation, because I have sent them." So Peter went down to the men and said, "Here I am, the person you're looking for. Why have you come?" They said, "Cornelius the centurion, a righteous and God-fearing man, well spoken of by the whole Jewish nation, was directed by a holy angel to summon you to his house and to hear a message from you." So Peter invited them in and entertained them as guests. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Thanks be to God.
Well, Eric, I know this is one of your favorite passages. So what comes to your mind when you're reading this, hearing this again today?
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, I identify with lots of the folks in here, but let's start with Peter. Where we left off last time, you know, Peter had in some ways been reenacting the miracles of Jesus and probably feeling pretty good about himself. You know, like this would kind of be like a little spiritual high, right? You know, you're seeing these wonderful things happening. God's working through you. And in some ways, like living with a tanner by the sea, like, I mean, let's not think of it as like vacation by the sea, because tanning hides stinks. So it's sort of like, you know, I'm being this amazing Christian who's like kind of like living with the stinky guy at the on the outside of town. And I kind of identify with the whole thing about you're really hungry. And so the only way you can handle it is to, like, you know, go to bed. It says he fell into a trance.
Yeah.
And so he's, you know, here's this guy, this disciple of Jesus, on this spiritual high. And it's almost like the story of Paul when he gets knocked off his horse, where God's going to appear and tell him that what you've been doing, it goes a lot further. And his world is literally about to turn upside down, because this is that pivotal moment where all of a sudden the church stops being oriented around the normal practices of Jewish life. And it starts to be the religion that's going to be more populated by others.
I don't think I've ever thought of it as this was a pivotal point in which the way of the church is being changed culturally. The pause was just really like taking that in. It's like, wow, yeah, that's right. That's right here. Because this vision, you think about a vision of what the church is to be like and how we are to eat together, or what are the yummy yucks, changes. I mean, it's in this moment that it changes. Well, and, Peter, and the thinking of, yeah, okay, he was on this spiritual high, and, you know, he goes to sleep because you're so hungry. You know, have you ever been so hungry and the food's not ready yet? What do you do? Because it's not like he just went and popped something in the microwave.
Yeah.
I mean, if we get really hungry, it's like, oh, we stop by a fast food restaurant, get something that's already prepared, get upset if it takes 10 minutes to get it, or pop something in the microwave and it's done in 5 minutes. But there, if someone is preparing food for you, you got to go kill the animal. You got to clean it. It's a long process. You get so hungry, you just go to bed and go to sleep. But yet God speaks to him about God's desire for the church, for community, through this dream, because he was probably, if he was hungry, dreaming about food and how good. I mean, I'm pretty sure he was, mm-hmm. if he couldn't already smell things cooking, he was imagining, right? Mm-hmm. When you think about, oh wow, this is gonna be so good. Mm-hmm. I'm drooling just thinking about it. So in this dream, and then God interrupts the dream. God mm-hmm. says, oh, you want something to eat? Here, I got mm-hmm. something for you. Mm-hmm. Using this thing that he was wanting and showing, giving him a lesson in that. So that's what I was processing, because I had never mm-hmm. heard it positioned in that way, but it makes so much sense.
Was he still hungry after the vision? Like, mm-hmm. I know if I were to see something mm-hmm. that I don't want to eat, or just, and I don't know exactly. We don't know how Peter, if Peter ever smelled something that he wasn't supposed to eat and thought, wow, that smells really good. Yeah. Or was he trained to the point where even the smell, he knew, you know what, I'm not even supposed to think that that smells good. And then in this trance, you know, he's like, all these different emotions are happening, and he wakes up and he's like, oh yeah, no way, I'm not doing this.
I had an experience that I kind of feel may be similar. And I don't know if it would be the same for all you who are like vegans, if like God's saying, like, you know, go have a hamburger or something. Like, but for me, okay, so I'm a white dude from the Midwest. And when my wife was in some ways trying to acculturate me to her culture, she started taking me to restaurants where I would be around unfamiliar food, mm-hmm. because the bodily reaction of disgust, it's a physical reaction. It's not like an intellectual thing where you're like, wow, I just feel like that's wrong. It's repulsion. Mm-hmm. It's feeling like your stomach churning. So I remember, so chicken feet, mm-hmm. They taste like hot wings, but they look like feet. You know exactly. You know exactly.
Yeah, there's no hiding it.
Nope. And so the first time that and that's a real typical Chinese delicacy, and you can get it lots of different ways. Mm-hmm. And so the first time I saw chicken foot, I had heard about chicken feet. I said, I want to try this. And the first time I saw one, I lost my appetite. Mm-hmm. When I went to visit my wife's family, her nephews and nieces, of course, had so much fun, because they were like elementary school age, and they loved getting reactions out of me mm-hmm. with what was going to be for dinner. And so there was a time where like one of them, you know, took a body part clearly identifiable, when you serve chicken in some Chinese restaurants, like the emphasis is to show it's fresh. And so you show all the parts to show it's that fresh. It wasn't in a freezer. Like, we just butchered it. The head of the chicken, you don't eat it. It's just there as a garnish. But one of her cousins picked it up and stuck it in my face. And my startle reaction was so strong that I knocked over the chair in the restaurant and fell backwards out of my chair, because I was feeling repulsion. Mm-hmm. And of course, the family was like embarrassed that their children did this thing to me, who is sort of like a guest, and they're trying to make a good impression with me. And my aunt grabs the chicken head out of her kid's hand and stuck it in her purse, which was like really, you don't do that. But she just wanted it off the table and didn't want her kids to mess with me anymore. And I'm like, I wonder if that was what it was like for Peter, where like you're raised your whole life to not just like intellectually think of these things as unclean, but to have like a visceral reaction where like it makes you want to pull back, or maybe even to vomit, mm-hmm. that like it's that kind of level of that is what unclean means. Mm-hmm. And God's challenging him.
I think it was because me, so I wasn't born into a vegan household, became vegan, but I can be around people who are eating meat. It's not repulsive. And I know my vegan story is different than some others, because other people, that is something that's much more repulsive. But for me, you know, I live with a meat eater. Mm-hmm. There are some times when he needs his bacon fix that he's like, okay, I'm going to, you know, fry up some bacon that I can't be in the same room. It's not for repulsion. It's just the smell messes with me, especially if it's really fresh. Mm-hmm. But I have had the experience where too frequently, well, people say, oh, you're vegan, don't you miss meat? No, I don't miss it. I don't long for it. I don't yearn for it. Not tempted to eat anything. So, but I think for him, it was more repulsion because it was a violation of the law for him, not just a preference. For me, it's a preference. Mm-hmm. If I decided to eat meat again, I might have a little discomfort, but it's not something critical.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder, was the unclean reaction that he showed, was it also a cultural learned response?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like I hear a lot of stories of immigrant stories, especially about children of color pulling out their lunches at school.
Oh, yeah.
And having people say
that's good, Libby.
Ew, what's that? Mm-hmm. Or this idea that your people's their food smells different than our food. Mm-hmm. Which when folks from the US travel internationally, they sometimes get told they smell like milk. So every culture smells a different way based on their food. You just get used to your culture's smell. But it's also a cultural division, a way in which we are not like them. Mm-hmm. And so I bet he had a sort of gut reaction, mm-hmm. but there's also an element of cultural superiority in it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting to me that this whole thing of we think your food is gross and it's a way we have superiority over you is just still happens exactly the same today.
Oh yeah.
Exactly. Sometimes I'm blown away when reading Acts at mm-hmm. how mm-hmm. much like us these people are.
But God is challenging someone who has conceptualized the gospel as centering him mm-hmm. and saying, mm-hmm. you're not at the center.
Yeah.
You are around me and I am the center.
Mm-hmm.
And my way is not your way. In some ways it's my way, this she idea. I'm going to borrow this from Willie Jennings, whose commentary we've been also mm-hmm. kind of our team has been reading in the background here. It's probably not an accident that this is a four-cornered sheet, because that is the way that people thought of the world as the four corners of the world. And so this, I've seen it drawn before as a net. I think that would be more of our way of thinking about it, but to see that the collection basket or holder represents the entirety of the world and all the foodstuffs of the world, descending from heaven, because they're up in heaven, coming down. And then God saying, in some ways, it's a reenactment of the Lord's Supper, take, eat, remember, and believe. Mm-hmm. But it's the food of the world. All these people who have yet to be reached with the gospel, and most are not kosher.
That makes me think of one of my sons when he was younger. He did not like to eat chicken that was on the bone. So, if I served him a plate and there was chicken thigh or bone or leg, he would not eat it. And his the way he would say it is, there's bone. I don't want to eat anything with bone. And that's when things started. I started thinking, okay, why? Like, why? That's interesting that he would do that. Is there something wrong here? Am I feeding him? Like, am I traumatizing him by serving him a piece of animal? Anyway, yeah. So that's my thought process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. And then there's just preferences, right? And then some of our food preferences, definitely not all of them, but some of our food preferences are genetic. At least when you do one of those DNA tests, one of my reports came back, you have a high likelihood of not drinking coffee. You have a high likelihood of this, right? And it's like, yeah, how do you know that from just a swab and a test?
Yeah.
And so some of these preferences could be baked into our DNA.
Wow. That's pretty deep, Michelle.
I know, right? Yes. Okay, like you prefer a salty versus a sweet. Mm-hmm. Or you prefer a sweet or a sour, or you can't taste a certain kind of flavor profile. It just doesn't register. So some of this is baked into our DNA.
Wow. Okay. So then if we were to take that and apply that to all these Jewish people, where this is repulsive and it's in their DNA to be repulsive, God is asking them to, God's asking something huge from them.
Mm-hmm. Go against your nature.
Yes. Yes.
One of the nerdy things that I get excited about is all the different types of animals, the four-footed animals, as well as reptiles and birds. It reminds me of Genesis 1 and the ways that the animals are categorized. It's a little unclear. There's some like speculation about how the animals are categorized, but it seems to be by locomotion. So like by the ways that the animals move. And so like, let's see here, let the water teem with living creatures, let birds fly above the air. So you've got your swimmies and you've got your flyers. And then you've got the next day, let the land produce living creatures according to their kinds, livestock, so those are hooved animals, creatures that move along the ground. But what it literally says is the creeping things. So like you've got your walkers and your creepers and then the wild animals.
Yeah.
And part of what made some of these animals that folks weren't supposed to eat is they were like the combination animals. So like that animal's not quite a walker or a creeper. That one's not quite like a flyer or a swimmer. It's like some midpoint. And those are the animals that you're not supposed to eat, which is why like a lobster, is that a swimmer or a creeper? Don't eat it. Because they break the categories.
They are so missing out.
Yeah. Wow. So it's about these like category breaking things that you're not supposed to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And these categories are being eliminated. God is changing the rules.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of this way of being. Like it used to be here, like my community, I want you to be set apart by these certain set of practices that make you distinct from the people around you. And now God is changing the rules and is saying, I actually want you to expand this group. And some of that means getting rid of those old distinctions and actually being like the people around you.
And that's
a dramatic change.
Oh, that is huge. Yes.
That is huge. And so what if we were to look at the impact of the pandemic on the church as a way of God is saying, you know what? I'm changing the rules.
Ooh.
I'm changing the rules about who you connect with. I'm changing the rules about how we do church and life together. I'm changing the rules. Oh, I love that. I love that.
That's
I love
so
it.
Good.
And we
that's
see
good.
That all through Acts, that God is just changing the rules.
Yeah.
Maybe 2020, 2020, 2021, this is a new, a different kind of acts for the church, yes, where God is saying, ooh, I am changing the rules. Mm.
What we're learning then in this passage is that it's a visceral, or a visceral response to not just go with it, right? There are, yeah, things that we're going to have to work out physically, mentally, yes, emotionally, to make these changes.
And when we do it, we have to be convinced that it is God, mm-hmm, right? Because it is, it can only because God has said to do this, because, yes, there's nothing in me that wants to do this. And, yes, that's what we see with Peter. It's only because God has said to do this, because there was nothing in him that wanted to do it. Even, yep, with all these wonderful, exemplary things that he was doing, God was setting him up to let him, mm-hmm, see, yes, I'm empowering you to do all these things. Now, mm-hmm, now comes the big thing. Now comes, you thought you were doing game-changing stuff. Oh, now comes the game changer. But you are only prepared to do this game-changing thing because you have seen me at work before. Mm. And so now, you know that you know that you know, mm, it's God. Because this, there's nothing in me that wants me to do this.
I love that God gave us Peter in the Bible, and that we get to see Peter do all kinds of really stupid stuff.
Like, I'm so glad he's there too.
Like, okay, because I'm thinking about, like, okay, there was like the food aspect of this, and like, don't put unclean things into your body. But like the other part that kind of has like been this repeating pattern through the gospel was circumcision. And we haven't come to that yet. But to think about like your own body being unclean and how circumcision represented that, and watching how Peter, who listens to God, still like wars within himself about food culture and what that means, and circumcision and what that means, and kind of has this journey of going back and forth on this, and like, he's getting it right. Nope. Now he's not getting it right. It's just like, I'm walking on water. Oh my gosh, I'm walking on water. Shook, right down to the bottom. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's, it's such a Peter thing, but it's such an us thing, mm-hmm, that like, at least for me, I see myself doing that all the time, where like, I'm feeling confident that I'm doing what God wants. Oh my gosh, this is so unfamiliar.
I'm imagining Peter at the at a table with this food now that is okay for him to eat. And what is his posture? How is he doing it? Is he doing it in a way where he's like, oh, I can't believe I've got to eat this now? And or was he saying, okay, Lord, the way you have given me hunger for the food that I did eat, is this the kind of hunger that I need for this, you know, for this new food? And I don't have it, Lord. So was there this processing, inner processing going on the whole, I'm sure there was.
Oh, that reminds me of this time I was with a group of people, and we were in on the US-Mexico border studying immigration. And we got invited to this woman's home, and she had prepared for us this beautiful meal. And there was no way to avoid eating meat. And I hadn't eaten meat in a long time. And I remember, like, before the meal, I was like, I'm going to eat this, because she put so much work and love into this meal. But I was like, Lord, I know you want me to eat this meal. Please protect my body, mm-hmm, and help me eat it, because, mm-hmm, you love this person. Mm-hmm. But I just remember, like, I needed help knowing that I could eat this meal with joy.
I wonder if perhaps his reaction was like the first time I had an Impossible Burger. So my daughter doesn't eat faux meats, right? She doesn't eat faux meats. I like faux meats, right? It's not that I have them every day, but you know, just like yesterday was someone was grilling burgers on the grill. I knew they were worse, so I bought an Impossible Burger, right? But I remember the first time I had one, because when I had it, I looked at it and was like, this looks like a burger. And then I, you know, took a bite and it's like, oh, wait, I don't know about this. And I said, I was with my husband. I said, babe, you got to bite this. because the wait staff said this was vegan, that it was the Impossible Burger. But I don't know, is this really, can I really eat this, or is this not? So I can imagine that it was with a bit of curiosity, or like, are you sure? Are you sure this is okay for me? So for me, that it was an Impossible Burger, yeah, it's vegan, you can eat it, was like, yeah, I don't know, it looks like the real thing. And for him, I can imagine, like, are you sure I can eat this? Because this could be, he had to get that idea that this is unclean food out of his head in order to eat and enjoy it. Like, I had to get the idea that this is beef, because it wasn't beef, out of my head. It looked like beef, smelled like beef, it had that little caramelization on it like beef, but it wasn't beef. And for him, he had to say, it looks like unclean food. I have always been told this was unclean food, but this food is no longer unclean for me.
And that sheet in his vision came down three times.
Yeah.
You know, I think about all the other stories where like someone is reluctant. Well, wait a second. That's Peter and Jesus saying, do you love me? So like, this is your story. Is like walking three on the water. Times. Like, no. Like, God knows that Peter needs three tries for it to sink in.
Yeah.
Peter always imagines himself at the center of the gospel narrative of all the, you know, all the cultural rules. He's always at the center, you know. But then there's this weird, so if we did a power analysis of this, Peter is about to be asked over for dinner by a contingent of armed guards.
And from a different culture than his own, too.
From a different culture. So we have like the, you know, majority culture, minority culture thing. Like, I'm the culture of the gospel versus like, wow, God's, you know, expanding the envelope, like beyond where he even imagined the outside edge was. And there's a power dynamic where all of a sudden he's reminded that he's part of a subjugated people group. Now, granted, they're sending like the slaves of the centurion and a soldier, but how many of you, if an officer of the law, you know, stopped over at your house and said, you need to come with me, sir, would enter that relationship thinking like, wow, this is going to be a wonderful, friendly visit where we're going to sit over dinner and talk about how we feel. I mean, that's not the context. Peter is being approached as a subjugated person in a land that's being occupied by the kind of people. It's not just any old Roman. It's a guy who spills blood for his living.
They're the crucifying culture.
Yeah, that's right. And so, he doesn't know that Cornelius is this guy who's been like donating to the temple and like doing good works for the poor. He sees a guy with weapons.
Except God does say, look, hey, someone is going to come ask for you. It's okay to go.
If it was me, and I watched the person I love the most get crucified, I wouldn't care if anybody, I'd be like, okay, God, like you said, it's okay. But like everything in me, like.
So you're saying you'd be like Peter.
His trauma.
Can you tell me two more times, please?
Yes. Just need two more times. The only time I think I would feel comfortable with the police officer coming to the house and not one, if it was Susanna's husband.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was
me
like,
too.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, if we were to put that in today's world, that would be a police officer, white police officer, coming to a person of color's home mm-hmm. and saying, come with me. Mm-hmm. Right. And just knowing all the bad rap that has been going on.
I kind of feel like God sort of has like this sense of humor that like to help Peter get over the impulse to maybe say no, like, okay, I'll try a bite. Like you're in that guy's house and he represents power. You'd finish your plate.
Hmm. Yeah.
Huh. That's interesting. I didn't even think of that.
I just think it's like there's all these different things that are going on in the background here. I'm like, God set this up. This is no average Roman. Hmm. And this is no average Jew.
Mm-hmm. So this
this is why in our next episode, we're going to talk about when Peter gets to Cornelius's house. Because mm-hmm. it is so fascinating. Thank you all for listening again to this conversation. Again, it's one of those where we started off, we didn't have any idea where God was going to be taking us, where our imaginations was going to be taking us. It got into about food and how we might be receiving it, but it is such a good illustration for the many things that we think about, the things that we say that we don't like or the things that we can't do. But the question is, what if God is asking us to do it? Where are those points of resistance? Is the resistance in our pride? Is the resistance in our culture? Is the resistance in what will other people think or say or do if we do this thing? Siblings in Christ, we invite you to think on that question. If God is calling you to a place, to a people, to a work, and you are saying, but God, I can't. This can't be done. This isn't the way that it has been done. But you know that you know that you know that it is God's Spirit who is moving you. Why are you still resisting? Maybe you're a little like Peter. We are all sometime or another. So join us again next week where we continue the story in the Radical Acts. We will continue with the second half of Acts chapter 10. We'll be looking at Peter at Cornelius's home. And until then, keep the faith and keep fighting for justice. This has been the Antioch Podcast.
You've been listening to the Antioch Podcast, conversations about biblical anti-racism. Don't let this be your last conversation.